your fault. Baby, it's not mine. Not chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, be no doubt when you see you are. Grass make dab in the middle of it. Grass make dab in the middle. We are grass make dab in the middle of it. Right on schedule.
The Secret Truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. Charlotte Littlefield is off tonight. We have this evening with us one of the finest guests that we've ever had before. We've had him on the program several times, but he's always refreshing to have because he gives us some new and refreshing perspectives. Welcome to our program, Patrick Wood.
Hi, George. Good to be back with you and your listeners again.
Well, I tell you what, you're the author of Technocracy Rising. Before that, you co-authored with Anthony Sutton, Trilaterals Over Washington, D.C. You have quite a background. Tell us a little bit more about yourself.
Well, I started tracking globalization and the global elite back in the late 1970s. And as you mentioned, I did work with the late Anthony Sutton in those days. And Anthony passed in 2002, unfortunately, and left me with all the burden of research and stuff. And that's what I'm involved with today. As I began to study technocracy several years ago, I realized, well, let's put it this way, all the dots got connected between technocracy and the original goals of the Trilateral Commission back in the 1970s to create a new international economic order. This is exactly what it is today. It's spreading like wildfire all around the planet, and most people still have not one clue as to what it is, where it came from, who's perpetrating it, and why we should care. So here we are.
Yeah, tell us a little bit of how this got started. Was it back in the 30s when they started broaching some of these ideas of technocracy? Tell our listening audience give them a little background here first.
Well, it was. It originally, after probably 15 years of banter back and forth amongst some engineers and scientists on the East Coast, 1932 was a pivotal date when technocracy as a movement was officially housed at Columbia University. They gave them temporary facilities there in Hamilton Hall to conduct their research and to set up this new economic system. And so that's where it got to start. It was only there for a year. They got kicked out because one of the promoters turned out to be a fraud. And so they got booted, and then the two original founders, or the bigwigs, I should say, they decided to form a membership organization called Technocracy, Inc., Incorporated, in other words. And they did. And at the peak of their movement, they had over 500,000 card-carrying members of Technocracy throughout North America, United States, and Canada. And it was a big deal for quite some years. Kind of fizzled out at the end of the 1930s, but it lived on in any case, and it was picked up again in the early 1970s by the people who founded the Trilateral Commission. So,
and didn't you say at one time that some of the uniforms they had sort of looked Nazi-like or something, wasn't there, early on before World War II? And when World War II came in, that sort of put a cold water on the movement. How did that work out?
That was a good bucket of cold water on them. I don't think they intended that consequence when they adopted the uniforms. But the director of operations for Technocracy Incorporated, a man by the name of William Wright, there's not much known about him other than the fact that he was working for an aircraft company. He's an aeronautical engineer, that had ties to Nazi Germany, and he'd been to Germany many times. And he came back and basically, as director of operations, says, we need to have a little bit more paramilitary look so people can identify us more easily. And so they did. They adopted a kind of a gray, special gray color, became known as technocracy gray, actually. And they had uniforms. The women had dresses and suits, and they had cars. You could go to any car dealer in the country back in those days and order your favorite car in technocracy gray.
My gosh, that's something.
They knew exactly what to do. They said, yes, sir.
Now, bringing that forward into the 70s, somebody else, there were two individuals that gave that additional push. Explain that to our listening audience.
Well, just, you know, I won't say it's just by coincidence, but we found Zbigniew Brzezinski, the co-founder of the Trilateral Commission with David Rockefeller. We found Zbigniew Brzezinski as a professor of political science at, guess where? Columbia University, right?
Right.
He wrote a book, and the book was called Between Two Ages, subtitle, America's Role in the Technotronic Era. And this was the book, I believe, that caught David Rockefeller's eye. The Rockefeller family had long had an association with Columbia anyway, gave them a lot of money over the years. And so Brzezinski and Rockefeller, kind of the beauty and the beast, teamed up to form the Trilateral Commission in 1973, specifically to create a new international economic order. Now, here's the thing. Either they invented some new international economic order that they weren't telling anybody about, or they stole one from history. And I would suggest that they stole one from history, namely technocracy from the 1930s, because in my research as an economic, educated guy, my research cannot find one other economic system in history that was ever defined to replace the status quo. It just was never done.
Okay.
Technocracy was the first, singularly the first, effort to create an alternative economic system for what we know as free enterprise or capitalism. It's got a few other names, but you get the idea.
Right.
Brand new stuff.
Well, you know, that subtitle of Brzezinski's book, Technotronic, wasn't that sort of a precursor to what's happening today, I guess, isn't it?
It was exactly. And if you analyze just the title itself, you can see what Brzezinski was saying. He said the title is Between Two Ages. Now, the fact that he talks about the technotronic era obviously is the second part of that, right? That's
right.
The second age.
Okay.
And so what was the first age? Well, the first age was what Brzezinski was looking at up to that point. Right?
Okay, so, yes.
So when he talks about between two ages, what he's saying is that he, right then, in whatever period of time it would have been, that he was envisioning a period of time that would sit in between those two ages. There was the previous age, and there was the future age to come. And I would suggest that period of time, that middle period of time, can be seen from 1973 to about maybe the year 2000, maybe 2005.
Okay.
That was the year. Those were the years between. Now, the technotronic era, which I suggest very strongly, is nothing more than warmed over technocracy from the 30s.
Okay.
The technocratic era has been kicking in, if you will, big time since 2005 with the ascendance of the United Nations, the green economy, sustainable development, global warming, new urban agenda, the 2030 agenda. All these things are technocracy that were fed to them, that is United Nations, by the Trilateral Commission back in the 80s. So they've been after this a long time, George.
Yes, they have.
Their fingerprints are all over it.
You know, it reminds me of the term full spectrum dominance, isn't it? Huh?
That's right. They were master strategists, I have to say that. And, you know, I don't like it, but we can give credit where credit is due to Brzezinski. The guy was a mastermind.
Yes, he
really
is.
Was. And
well, his foreign policies are still being carried out, are they not?
Well, absolutely. He's been extremely, just incredibly influential. Unfortunately, most people don't even know the name Brzezinski. But this is the guy that's been guiding foreign policy ever since 1973. And he's still around. He's still alive. Of course, David Rockefeller is still alive, too. I don't know what kind of vitamins they take. But
well, I don't either. But I tell you, Brzezinski, though, was influencing and giving advice through the Woodrow Wilson Center about giving arms, small arms, to the Ukrainians and stuff like that, you know?
Oh, gosh.
And I mean, he heats up these battles. He's really a warmonger. I mean, he comes from that warmongering side.
He has had his hands into every facet of foreign policy.
Yes, he is.
Absolutely everyone. He was the guy that got us in, that sucked Russia into Afghanistan originally. When the United States...
Well, that's right. He did,
The Mujahideen to fight the Russians.
Right,
and
right.
They did fight the Russians, and it brought the Russians to their knees. They finally bailed out. That was their Vietnam. And they bailed out with their tail between their legs. And then the Mujahideen became the enemies of the United States.
Supposedly, yeah. I mean, they invent these people. Now we've got this Syrian thing that is very dangerous to this country. Mm-hmm. And, you know, don't know what's going to happen over there. You know, Aleppo, they're going back and forth a little bit there. Supposedly, the Syrian government's supposed to have the eastern part under control. Then we're hearing now the rebels have moved back in. It's hard to define that at any one time, isn't it?
It is, and I tell you, it just gives me a headache, you know, trying to play the, it's like watching the championship tennis match, you know.
Right.
Everybody's looking, following the ball, right? Their head jerks to the right, then it jerks to the left, then it jerks to the right, then it jerks to the left.
Now, getting
after
back,
while,
you know,
after a while, you get a sore neck and you get a headache.
Getting back to this Agenda 21 and then the Agenda 2030 now, did that come out of the Paris Accords or what? How's that working through the system now, those kinds of ideas?
Yeah, it absolutely did. And the way we trace this whole thing is we have to go back to the 1980s, and starting in 1983 through 1987, the United Nations called for a task force to create a new document for the future. And the leader of this task force, the chosen leader by the UN, was Gro Harlem Brundtland. She was a European, a technocrat, if you will, an environmentalist, also the former prime minister of her country, home country, and she was a member of the Trilateral Commission. Most importantly, she was a member of the Trilateral Commission. And so in 1987, her commission terminated. They finished their work, and they produced a book. It was called Our Common Future. The book is still available on Amazon, by the way. People can go buy it if they don't believe it's a real book. It's out there. So people can get the book and see what it says, but Our Common Future popularized the term sustainable development. They weren't the very first person to ever use that term, but they popularized the term and grabbed it for the, you know, marketing purposes, whatever. And Our Common Future took all of their findings and put it into a book for the sake of spawning Agenda 21 in 1992. Now, the Rio de Janeiro conference in 1992 is where the book and the document, Agenda 21, came from. The United Nations has widely hailed Gro Brundtland as being the architect of Agenda 21. And she is, of course, a member of the Trilateral Commission. Well, you don't have to stretch too far, George, to figure out that this was Trilateral Commission policy that they were purposely feeding to the United Nations. And it was wildly successful. Wildly successful. It has taken over the entire planet.
Well,
we've got 193 nations of the world, at least, are signed on to various programs the United Nations has put out in the name of Agenda 21.
Right. Now, that word, though, sustainable development, the Club of Rome had some doing in that with the publications of Limits to Growth. Is that not right?
Well, I'm not sure. I don't remember if they actually used the term sustainable development.
Okay.
But obviously, their policies were right in line with it.
Okay.
That's sure.
Okay.
But you see, any good initiative that you're going to sell to the public, it needs to have a marketable name.
Yes, yes.
I don't care what it is, Coca-Cola or, you know, Pepsi or whatever. You work at that. You work at getting a name.
A branding, brand something, yeah.
That's right. Presents your brand.
Yeah.
And sustainable development was the term that was used as their branding. And what people don't get is a sustainable development is an economic term with a very specific meaning. It represents a resource-based economy where energy is the primary driver. Now, that's exactly what the United Nations has been doing for the last 25 years. Energy is everything these days. Obama wanted to kill coal. He wanted to kill shale oil. He wanted to kill the petroleum industry. What? Why such an attack? And of course, this is global, not just here. Why are they attacking our traditional sources of energy like this in order to bring up green, you know, green energy, alternative energy? Well, it's simple. They realized that they couldn't control the hydrocarbon-based energy sources. They were too vast. They were in too many countries. It was impossible to control everybody to get what they wanted in their economic system. So, wanting to control energy, however, the only thing they could do to allow for control of the limited alternative energy was to kill the hydrocarbon-based energy structure, completely kill it. And that's exactly what they've done, what they're trying to do. I don't think they're going to do it. Even now, I think they've got real problems with it. But that's the agenda of this whole, you know, kill off the hydrocarbon business, destroy that source of energy, so that they can control what remains.
Was that one of the reasons they were against Trump then, right?
Well, yes, indeed. You know, but I want to say the jury's not out yet on how this is going to play out with the Trump administration.
I know. He's surrounding himself with all these Goldman Sachs people and all these big corporate chiefs, see?
Well, look, if a Secretary of State really does become, or if the, I should say, the CEO of Exxon.
Right, right.
If he becomes the Secretary of State, I don't know what this is going to mean, you know, in terms of policy, but it makes me extremely nervous because anywhere you get around energy executives of any sort, you got problems. Historically, you've got problems.
Right, right.
And I can't imagine that this guy isn't going to bring problems to us, but we'll see. I'm waiting. I'm waiting until the end of January to see how it looks after Trump is actually seated as president and he's completed all of his appointments. Because I not only want to look at the appointments individually, which I'm doing, of course, as he announces them.
Sure. We're all doing that, yeah.
They still have to be confirmed.
Right.
But what I want to see more than anything else, I want to look at them all on a single sheet of paper, and I want to, with what I know about each one of them individually, and I want to see if any particular pattern emerges from that whole picture.
Right, right, right. That's the way to do it. Yeah.
That's what I'm looking for.
Yeah. You know, the one word that comes to my mind to describe Trump is he's a pragmatist.
Yes.
Okay. And he's pragmatic in trying to achieve his own personal interest or goals, see. And so he'll draw upon about anyone out there to do that. See.
Yep.
So that's why he reaches across the aisle on all of these appointments, I think. Is, and also, he's co-opting some of his formerly adversaries. Okay.
He is, absolutely, and drawing them in.
That's right, right. They're going to work for him now. See, they were criticizing him before. Now they're working for him. See?
That's right. That's right. I would hasten to add to your thought, I think, that the pragmatic side of Trump is very much a part of the technocrat mind.
Okay.
Now I'm gonna stop short of calling Trump a technocrat. Okay.
Okay.
So just for the record, listen up, people. I am not calling Trump a technocrat.
Okay, now Patrick, here's the point I'd like to make right now, is that, but he has an authoritarian type of personality.
Yes.
See what I mean? And
yes,
that bodes well for the statist or the government power over the individual. See what I mean?
Well,
so
right.
I don't like that characteristic about Donald Trump, Sue.
Well, here's what he has said repeatedly in his campaign. He said it since too. He is Mr. Fix-It.
Okay.
Mr. Fix-It.
Okay.
Now we need a lot of things fixed. You know.
Sure.
That.
Sure.
I know
yeah.
it too.
Well,
we really do.
Yeah. Well, you especially, Patrick, because you really drill down in this stuff deeply.
Well,
you're
know,
really a fine researcher.
America has problems. It really does.
And we do. We do.
Fixed. But. Being that Trump is not the seasoned politician that some of the other people we know and don't love necessarily.
Right.
But he's a businessman, a very successful businessman, who has been in the business of fixing things for a long time. He's
right.
a deal maker.
He is.
He's a fixer. And
right.
he said that. He said, I can fix it. In fact, a couple of times he said, I'm the only one that can fix it.
Right,
so,
right.
I would like to say on one hand, I'm glad that some things might be indeed be fixed. But we also know that President-elect Trump is not a constitutionalist by a long shot.
Right.
And so he really doesn't have a very good grasp of what the Constitution is and what it's, you know, what the whole philosophy behind it was.
Right.
Because if he did, he wouldn't be trying to fix America by making deals.
Right.
He would be trying to fix America by restoring the Constitution to its rightful place.
Right, exactly. But one of the problems I see is he comes from a corporate chief executive officer where you can command. You have a command position. As the presidency, within the office of the presidency, it's not quite that way. So you have all these civil service and you have all of these other two branches of government doing their thing, see, and it's been corrupted. Now that's what he's going to have to deal with, see.
That's right. That's right, and it's going to be interesting just to see how he does it. But
how that plays
his personality,
out,
his nature, his MO, his demonstrated MO has been very autocratic.
Yes, very autocratic. That's right.
You have to be that way, right?
But they're working for him and being paid for him, and there's a direct connection to those command systems. See, but in a government like we have today, and the one that has become corrupted by big money, it's not the same. You don't have that same command, structure.
That's right. And I would also hasten to add here, just in general, that government should not be run as a business. That's not why it's there. That's not what the Constitution says. Government is not a business. There are no deliverables except to protect the people and to, you know, provide for a certain amount of safety and stuff. But the goal of government is not to be a business. Any more than the role of a church is to be a business. Churches are not businesses. They're supposed to be there to serve the people in the church, to be shepherd to those people, not to be a business where the people sitting in the pews are customers. You and I are not customers of our government.
Exactly.
We are citizens of our country. The government is supposed to run certain features or functions within our country. And we benefit from that.
Well, it used to be where they're supposed to be our servants, but we become their servants.
Well, we have.
You know, that's the problem. See, that's the downfall right there of America.
This was not by accident.
Yeah.
Back in the 1990s when Bill Clinton was president. And remember, he came in as president right at the same time that the Rio de Janeiro conference was taking place where Agenda 21 was produced.
Okay.
Bill Clinton was up to his eyeballs in Agenda 21 from the get-go.
Yes.
He was also a member of the Trilateral Commission, by the way, and so was George Bush before him. And so one of the first things that Bill Clinton did in his administration with Al Gore at his side is he signed a number of executive orders and then formed a commission to reinvent government. Reinvent government. This was the exact term they used. I've documented it in my book, Technocracy Rising. And the reinvention of government took the nature of government and changed it and turned the whole methodology around to where the citizens became the customers.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
This was part of the Agenda 21 program.
Right, right.
And so now nothing has been right ever since Bill Clinton did his black magic for those 8 years.
Right.
Nothing in our country has ever been the same again, George. And this is why. They subtly turned everything on its head. They turned the nature of government on its head in our country. This happened in other countries, too, around the world, by the way. And sustainable development then and Agenda 21 has slipped up on us, snuck up on us, and has now infiltrated every last community in America. And I mean that. There's
right.
not one community where this whole mess has not infiltrated. And we need to, the people, we need to stop this. It can only be stopped by individuals at this point. The national government will never save us.
Well, they've corporatized it with administrative law, it looks like, and thrown out the window constitutional law.
And that's right. That you know, the whole thing, at, like you said, it's a full spectrum, whatever.
Right, full spectrum dominance. And that was originally a military term, by the way.
Exactly.
Okay? And
exactly.
Now it's being applied by some people. There's the total awareness surveillance initiative, too, that you speak about, you know, in your book and stuff. But anyway, those terms are interchangeable sometimes. You know what I mean? The lay person uses them interchangeably sometimes.
Absolutely. I refer to it often as just a total awareness society.
Yes, yes. Total awareness.
But there's several terms that describe that now.
Yes, yeah, together they're describing the thing and holistically. Yeah.
That's right. And I suppose since you brought up the idea of intelligence here that we ought to make a point.
Yeah, do that.
That George Bush in 2005, George Bush established the Office of Director of National Intelligence. And all of the agencies that existed at the time, there were 17 of them, all of the intelligence agencies were handed over to the Director of National Intelligence. In other words, there was a mass consolidation and concentration of power into one office. And, and one man was appointed to reorganize the entire infrastructure of the intelligence community under the Director of National Intelligence office, and of course the DNI is a cabinet level position now, answers directly to the president, right?
Right.
So, who did he appoint to be the first DNI in 2005? It was John Negroponte, an ex-military guy and a member of the Trilateral Commission.
Right. Ah, yes.
Isn't that a small world?
Yes.
So I asked the question, well, was he reorganizing the intelligence community with all of its surveillance and stuff to serve the American people or to serve the interest of the Trilateral Commission and its intended technocracy?
Right.
I don't think we need to stretch too far on that to answer the question.
Right. I was part of the NSA, and the Army Security Agency in West Berlin, and we were intercepting traffic going into Wall Street in 1964. Okay?
Oh, yes.
So, I mean, they've been using all these intelligence apparatuses, and the latest thing they have, it's not the latest, but it's been out there for a number of years, is the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency.
Oh, boy.
And that thing is large enough. It's the third largest building in the Washington, D.C. area.
Yep.
The largest building is the Pentagon. The second is the Foreign Relations Building, Reagan, I think, building downtown. And then the third largest building is this Geospatial Intelligence Agency. I mean, they are building these gigantic, immense organizations, and they're doing the work for the corporate people, looks like.
Well, they're doing it for the sake of the technocrats, they're, you know, whatever corporations might be involved, might be complicit in it. It's for the sake of establishing technocracy in the end.
Right, right.
Engineers and scientists know that if you build a machine,
right,
you have to have a way to monitor that machine. And that's what intelligence is all about. They think that they're going to completely dominate society and run society, not just here, on a global basis. They're going to run it everywhere. They think they are, and they call it, in fact, their own definition. This has been a longstanding definition from even the 1930s. It says technocracy is the science of social engineering, the scientific operation of the entire social mechanism to produce and distribute goods and services to the entire population. Now, they're building this machine. They look at society and say, it's just like a machine. So we need to monitor that machine. We need to know, we need to have data in order to know how to control the machine. So they acquire data, big data. That's what they call it now. They call it
right, data. Right.
So they're agglomerating data to themselves like there's no tomorrow. There'll never be enough data. But the reason that data is being collected is so that they can control the objects of their engineering, and that is society and the people in it themselves.
Right.
So everywhere in the world today, and we see this especially here, data is being sucked up at breakneck speed. Every conceivable shred of data about you and I is being centralized within the government. Some of it's at the NSA. Some of it is elsewhere. But it's all accessible to the technocrats.
Right. Well, Palantir is that company that Peter Thiel established with CIA money. And the word Palantir relates back to Lord of the Rings. Mm-hmm. And Palantir is the word to describe seeing stones.
Yep.
And he's sitting on, Peter Thiel sits on the steering committee of the Bilderberg Group. Can you believe that? They have all that information right at their fingertips.
Yes, they do. So we could rightly say whoever controls the data is going to control everything.
Right.
And that's what they're after right now. So Obamacare is not about your health; it's about your data.
Right.
Common Core is not about students getting educated; it's about the data
that they collect
on the students.
There's a book on big data, and what they're running into. There's two British engineer scientists, computer people, and they wrote a book on big data. The problem with big data is these databases, the social networking, have become so tremendously large. It's hard to deal with that large a database. See.
Yes, it is. It really is.
But they're pioneering in it now. The British are over there. They have funding now in $50 million funding on this one subject, on big data.
Well, they should. You know, our government and this whole technocracy movement have learned to accumulate and store digital data.
Right.
And they put together a network that allows the sucking up of all this data, vacuuming up, and then storing it. And it's stored in a pretty good, in a pretty good way as well. Like for instance, the NSA, the new NSA center in Utah, can store theoretically all the known data in the world: videos, everything, audio, all text, everything. So they're able to store data in massive amounts, but the technology for analysis of that data has not kept up.
That's true. Yeah. Because to get into it and to make sense of it, it takes a lot of time and computer power.
Well, it does. Now, and this is the big, this is why the big race right now, and the people like Thiel are involved in this.
Right, right.
The big race now is to foment an advance in computer science that would vastly, improve the speed on which data could be analyzed and sifted.
Yes,
by artificial intelligence algorithms. And so what we have today, we got several potential breakthroughs that are just waiting to happen. One is in quantum computing.
Yes.
There is a company called D-Wave, a very serious company, lots of venture capital in it, that they've already created a quantum computer, and now they're just expanding it to where it will, be when it kind of reaches critical mass, if you will. A quantum computer would be able to analyze all of the known data, for instance, that the NSA has, in virtually instantaneously, just in a heartbeat. That's never been possible before. All the computers we've had to analyze it in a linear fashion. It's kind of churning through the data, trying to find stuff.
Right.
But a quantum computer would be able to look at all that data at the same time and come out with answers to questions that were asked it.
Oh, my gosh.
Now, there are other technologies that are almost to the breakthrough stage as well. One is molecular computing.
Right.
The other is, which kind of an offshoot would be, with DNA. There's lots of things right now that are kind of on the edge of it. But once computing capacity catches up to storage capacity, Let me tell you what's going to happen, George.
Okay.
Listen carefully.
Okay.
We are screwed.
I got you. I got you. Yeah, that's a good way to put it, isn't it? Huh?
I think that's it.
Yeah, this scientific dictatorship then will be a reality, is what you're saying, huh?
Well,
if
I don't know what I don't know what's around to block it.
What can stop it? What can stop it then? I mean, they've got all the money in the world behind it, but now no one ever thought that Trump would be elected either. See.
Well, but either way, they would have gotten their way, George.
I know. They've got all these Goldman Sachs people, and they're around Trump already. See,
they're not going to let their agenda slip away.
Yeah,
you know what? Even in the Brexit situation in Great Britain, where they voted to pull away from the EU,
right?
Everybody thought, and I've talked to some people over there that voted for Brexit,
right?
And,
right.
They thought this, it was going to be a done deal. They rebelled against the EU, told them where to stick it. And then what did they do? They turned around and they appointed Theresa May as prime minister.
Exactly.
Now, Theresa May was in charge of our equivalent of Homeland Security for a long time. And she is a classic example of a technocrat.
Exactly.
So
yes.
Now she's running the country. And what chance do you think England is going to have to actually leave the EU? Now they're talking it's going to take 10 years.
They're putting it off now with the excuses of additional voting. A vote needs to be taken, or the MPs and the Parliament need to sign off on it. And it's not going to happen. Doesn't look like.
The bottom line is the people were betrayed.
Yeah, I think so.
That's all you can say. The people are being betrayed even as we speak now. Could we possibly be feeling the same way a couple of years from now?
Well,
because we kind of had our Brexit vote, right?
Right.
With Trump. I mean, we said, hey, we don't want any of this, too many people manipulating us and whatever. And we're going to rebel against that. So America rebelled against the machine, against the man.
Well, now, what's important to think about on this Trump vote is that the people... the anger, there's a lot of energy there that was pent up anger against the government in general. See what I mean?
Absolutely.
People begin to see the government as an adversarial thing and getting worse and more repressive. And so this vote relieves somewhat of that energy. We're talking about real energy here. See?
Yep.
And so that's one thing that the vote did do temporarily. Now, what you're saying though is over another year or two, what's going to happen? I don't know. See?
Yeah, I know. And I don't think we're going to have long to wait. Some of the people that he's brought into the administration, like you said, are downright scary.
I know.
Anybody from Goldman Sachs, I just sweat. Anybody from the head of an Exxon corporate giant, I sweat.
Yes.
I sweat when there's too many four-star generals and admirals in positions.
Right. Because you're saying authoritarianism again, see, with those.
The military, they're exactly
authoritarian, see. Well, in personality typing, there's what we define as a personality, authoritarian personality type, okay?
Right.
And usually those kind of people come out of very strong families with a very strong father. Okay,
right.
And they find security and in an environment of very strong personality types that exude that authoritarianism. See what I mean?
Yep, exactly. Well, it's going to be interesting. Now, I know some people may be thinking as we're talking here that it's just kind of a lot of hot air, and how do we know that technocracy is real, and
You were way ahead on this, Patrick. How far ahead on this were you on this? When did this snap in your own mind?
About 10 years now.
Okay.
I first started studying it about 10 years ago, it took me a couple of years to get my head wrapped around it.
Okay.
And then, of course, my book, Technocracy Rising, has been out for 2 years now. And I have been speaking extensively on the radio and TV, media, whatever, wherever I can get out, and in person, to try and raise awareness around America as to what this stuff is. But listen, I got the Christmas gift for all time this year.
What is that? Tell me.
Well, I'll tell you. This is... I figure that the Lord himself has given me this Christmas gift.
Okay. He probably did, Patrick.
Well, here it is.
Okay.
A world-class global scholar by the name of Parag Khanna.
Okay.
And when I say world-class, I mean exactly that. He is a technocrat, no doubt, but he has been walking the halls of academia now for the last 15 years, wowing the people, like at the World Economic Forum and the Club of Rome and all these other highfalutin things. He's a political scientist. He's kind of a futurist in a sense as well. But he is, he is Mr. Sustainable Development.
Okay.
He's articulate. He's young.
So he's a good example to point to as to this future plan that's unfolding. Is that right?
That's right. So
good teaching tool.
He's releasing a book.
Okay.
On January 10th, which is my birthday, by the way, and I'm going to be the first.
Happy birthday in the future. A future happy birthday. Okay.
The name of his book is Technocracy in America.
Really? Okay.
The subtitle is Rise of the Infostate.
Oh, my gosh.
Now, listen, this isn't made up.
Yeah.
He wrote an article for Time magazine.
Okay.
In which he showcased his book. There's a picture of it there. In fact, you can go to my website and look at the story. Leading scholar outs.
And his name again?
His name is Parag, P-A-R-A-G.
Oh, Parag.
His last name is Khanna.
Khanna. Parag Khanna. Okay.
Yeah. And he's a world-class scholar, but he's writing this book. He's presenting it to the global elite. He's promoting it to the global elite.
Okay.
They listen to this guy. That's my point. Listen to some of the radical things that he's suggesting in his book. He wrote this with his own hand, so I'm not speculating on what he's going to say. This is what he's already said about what the book is.
Okay.
Number one, he says we need to – well, at first he says that democracy in America ain't working.
Okay.
So number one, to fix it, we need to abolish the Electoral College.
Oh, now, gosh, yeah.
A lot of people want to do that.
Yeah.
So let's skip that one. Number two, he wants to create a streamlined and expert cabinet. He doesn't like the way the cabinet is organized now. He says it needs to be greatly consolidated, and the power needs to be consolidated into the cabinet. Number three, you'll love this one.
Okay.
Replace the Senate with an assembly of governors.
Oh, my gosh.
So that's just what they said back in the 30s. They wanted to dismiss all of Congress in the 30s.
Well, they changed the election of the senators by the states to a popular vote. Isn't that right?
They did, but now this goes one step further. He wants to just get rid of the Senate altogether.
So they're going to be appointed in these positions.
Dismiss them.
Yeah, I got you.
Dismiss them.
Oh, that's good. That sounds so great, man. Can't wait for this. Yeah.
That's right. He says every state needs to elect two governors. One governor is going to be the home governor.
Yeah.
And the other governor is going to be the Washington governor.
Oh, my gosh.
So we need to have an assembly of governors, you see.
Oh, I see. Okay.
They'll just have authoritarian executive control.
Right.
Now, how about this? Number four.
Okay.
He says the Constitution desperately needs to be modified.
Okay.
He says, let's just turn it over to the Supreme Court. Let them do it.
Oh, gosh, yeah, sure.
How will that work out?
Boy, that's fine, isn't it? That's good. This is a plan on how to destroy the country, isn't it?
Well, no kidding. You see, Parag Khanna is one of the primary advocates in the world of a borderless world.
I got you.
He wants to do away with all borders altogether.
Within the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement would be one of his approved plans, right? I'm sure.
Well, you know it is, and it's odd. On one of his websites about a former book, which was called Connectography, he talks about the North American Union and even gives a map.
Okay.
And I have more research to do on this guy. Okay.
Okay.
This isn't the end of it.
But, sure. Okay.
But he is into a borderless world.
Okay.
And he's into creating city-states where the city-states will be smart cities, where everybody's controlled.
Okay.
And all be connected together like one big global city.
Oh, my God.
This is his dream. So he says, in any case, this is how we're going to fix America. let's just radically restructure the whole thing.
Yeah.
And basically throw out the Constitution, get rid of the elected representation, and just turn it over to the experts. This is exactly what they said to do back in the 1930s.
Well, I see he's part of the Council on Foreign Relations. He's been over there. So these are the typical associations and memberships that people like this have, right?
Oh, this guy has a resume already for only being, you know, I think he's still under 40. The guy's got a resume like you just wouldn't believe.
Is he a citizen of what? Where?
Well, I'm kind of assuming he might be a citizen of the U.S. now. He speaks as good an English as you and I do.
Okay.
But listen, he was born in India.
Right.
He was raised in the UAE, United Arab Emirates.
Oh, man.
And then he went to school. He graduated from Georgetown with a master's degree.
Yeah.
And then he went to get his doctorate at the London School of Economics.
Well, London School of Economics and Political Science is the total name of that school.
That's right. So, that's exactly right.
Yeah, right. And it's a spawning ground for world government people.
Absolutely. The LSE has been the primary, the primary academic pusher of fascism.
That's right.
That was their goal, was to promote fascism. And now, of course, they're a world-class university, and everybody respects them, and blah, blah, blah.
So what you're doing, you're pointing a finger at him and saying, this is a good example of what we don't want. But he's advocating this, this, and this, right?
Well, it is, but it's even more than that.
Okay.
Even more than that, George. This is the first time that the global elite have come out and actually used the word technocracy in the right context.
Oh, I see. And in this new book of his, he's using it in his title.
Yeah. That's right. He's using his title. He's talking. And in fact, he said in his article.
So they're using him to broach this technocracy thing.
That's right.
Change in government. Yeah.
That's exactly right. And he says, very pointedly, what America needs is direct technocracy. That's how we should be run, a direct technocracy.
So we need these smart meters to limit our energy or to track our energy use, right?
That's right. We need all the stuff. Yeah. All the stuff that's going on right now is what we need. And, Kana talks about infrastructure incessantly. I've listened to some of his videos. He just always talks about infrastructure.
Okay.
And that's what Agenda 21 talks about, too, about changing the infrastructure of countries, like the institutions, like Reinventing Government by Bill Clinton.
Right.
It talks about reinventing, how things are done, like government becomes business instead of servants of the people. And so infrastructure talks about roads. It talks about trains. It talks about data communications and stuff like that, about transferring energy, whether it be pipelines or whatever, all that stuff wrapped up as infrastructure. They see infrastructure as the way that they're going to implement technocracy. That includes the data infrastructure we talked about.
Okay.
So right now, infrastructure is what's on Kana's mind. Technocracy in America is a lot about infrastructure. I know it's going to be there because it's been in everything else he did. I don't think it's just going to change his complete stance on this. But here's one of the things that concerns me about our new administration.
Okay.
Is that there's a real emphasis on infrastructure.
Right. He's wanting to fund that and fix bridges and highways and everything else. He's putting out that already.
That's right. And I will readily admit that we have problems with our road system and our rail in America. It's a joke.
Right.
They do need to be fixed.
Yeah.
But because of the global elite's emphasis on infrastructure and because of the emphasis in our current administration on infrastructure, this is an area we need to watch very, very carefully.
Well, what comes to my mind is public-private partnerships and transferring that infrastructure into their privately ownership hands using America. See, that David Rubenstein in 2012 at the World Economic Forum expressed the idea that this capitalism that we're under now is not working, and that maybe we ought to look to China like state capitalism. He said that.
Yeah.
See, and then they dominate most states, these corporations do.
Exactly.
And then they'll have use of unlimited capital to transfer those infrastructure projects into their own hands, assets.
Right.
So they're wanting to buy out the world. That's it.
Yeah. You might remember the North American Union. attempt back in the mid-2000s.
Yes.
2005.
Yeah. Waco.
We fought that tooth and nail.
Right.
I didn't know you back then, but I was there. I fought it tooth and nail.
Well, H. Ross Perot, we supported him because he knew all about the NAFTA, and he knew that it would not be good for jobs here. Well, he was way ahead of everybody else on that.
That's exactly right. So the Trans-Texas Corridor, which I'm sure you're familiar with.
Yes, uh-huh.
That was the big deal, to push that corridor up through, from Mexico all the way up through the United States into Canada.
Right.
To create this new infrastructure of goods and stuff to move around.
Right.
Well, Bush was the one that really pushed that. And one of the operatives that worked with Rick Perry to, get stuff done in Texas was a lady by the name of Elaine Chao.
Okay.
And Elaine Chao, you can look this up on her resume. It's on Wikipedia, for instance. It's got all the details there. She worked for George Bush in two capacities. One, she worked as the as the U.S. Secretary of Labor. Okay. And then she also worked as Deputy Secretary of Transportation. Now, in that role, in her role as a transportation expert, she was up their eyeballs in the Trans-Texas Corridor.
Okay.
She was one of the major players in that whole debacle.
Right. Okay. I got you.
Okay. I mean, this is a woman that we should not trust any farther we could throw her.
Although right.
I think she looks like she's not a very large woman. You could probably throw her a few feet. But I still wouldn't want to trust her because she has now been nominated to be the new Secretary of Transportation.
I got you. I understand. Okay. That's not good.
Infrastructure with a capital
I. Right.
I am very concerned what this woman has in mind on how to, reorder or restructure the transportation industry in America, considering her record, if I was the one who was going to appoint anybody to office, I would not pick anybody that has a history like Elaine Chao.
Right.
I just wouldn't, because she was swimming with the big fish.
Right, I got you.
Who want to subvert our country.
Right, I understand.
Yeah, I know. So, anyway,
It's not looking good, Patrick. These appointments are not looking good. They're not looking good.
We just need to watch it. I'm not ready to make a complete pronouncement. We just, kind of throw out a few things that are concerned. But by the end of January, we're going to be able to sit down and look at the whole picture. And I think there will be a picture that jumps out to us, honestly, about where this is going to be headed. It may be good. I'm not saying it has to be bad. It might be good. But I don't think we're going to be able to see that until we can look at the whole picture and know exactly where Trump is headed with this whole ship of state.
Have you come across the name Robert Zoeller?
Robert Zoeller?
Yeah, Robert Zoeller. Actually, Heidi Cruz worked for him when she was in the trade with him. Okay? And Robert Zoeller is one of the ultimate insiders. So if we start watching Robert Zoeller, it might be an indication of where this Trump thing's going. See what I mean?
Yes, indeed. Okay.
Because this guy, at one time, he advocated to take private Japan Post. Can you believe that?
Oh.
and Japan Post is the 25th largest corporation in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Because what they do in Japan is that they do banking and buying of bonds, government bonds, through their post office.
Uh-huh.
See? And so over the decades, it has become a tremendous money, okay? Mm-hmm. An aggregation of tremendous billions into the trillions of dollars and become the 25th largest corporate entity in the world, see?
Wow. How do you spell?
Zoeller.
Oh, okay.
He's skull and bones and all that other stuff. He has the credentials, see?
Yep.
Okay?
Yep, absolutely.
He's also Goldman Sachs and all that.
Oh, yeah.
Okay?
There you go.
So he's right in the inside, and it's interesting. It'll be interesting to see where he's at on this. And since Heidi Cruz actually is Goldman Sachs connected too.
Yes, she was.
See? And so that's always been, one time a friend of mine, we were broadcasting three speeches, Ron Paul, Rand Paul, and Ted Cruz. And a friend came up to me after the broadcast and he said, he's shaking his head, and I said, "What's wrong, Charles?" And he's an All-American out of Rice, so he knows something, you know, in economics and history. And he said Ted Cruz's speech was too perfect. Yeah. And so I started digging down into that and found out he's tied to the Bushes and all that oil stuff in Houston. So, I mean, that's why we were against him from then on. I could not support him at all, even for state senator.
Yeah.
Or U.S. senator from Texas, you know. Yeah. But anyway, that's going to be an interesting. We have about 3.5 minutes left. What would be some of your closing comments, Patrick?
Well, I probably should mention that Elaine Chao is married to Mitch McConnell.
Oh my gosh. That's the name. That's the woman. Yeah, I know now. I've seen her. I've seen them standing side by side, so in a photograph. So right there, and he's the majority leader.
I know.
Yeah, in the Senate. So
surrounded.
Oh my gosh.
Listen, what people need to do.
They
need to wake up and pay attention to this before it's just absolutely too late. And I cannot stress enough. They need to read my book, Technocracy Rising. They're not going to get this stuff.
We have all of that up on the site now, so they can come in after listening to this and go to our site at any time, and you go to your book sites and all that other stuff. And even I'm going to put all this other stuff up now too on the connectivity here of Parag, you know, and so forth.
Yep. So we both have a little bit more stuff to watch because we've had this conversation. I'm glad for that. And I know you're going to be watching also.
Man, I've been doing this for 30 years, Patrick. And, of course, you've been writing and researching since you wrote the book with Anthony Sutton, right?
That's right. We're coming up on 40 years.
40 years. So you've been looking at this stuff 40 years. I've been looking at it for 30, quite as long. But, of course, I studied the trilateral and all that other stuff, too, and how it figures into the other, you know what I mean, organizations.
Yeah.
Of a power. We have to look at the power system on a pyramidal type of basis. So where do we go from here? Give us a couple of minutes of closing comments here.
Well, where we go from here, it's going to be up to Americans to save America. We cannot expect any national government whatsoever, or even a state government, of course, to save America. It's down to the people. And if we, the people, as individuals, do not go back into our communities and begin to root this ideology out, we will not succeed. We will be trampled by this whole thing, and we will wind up in a scientific dictatorship. This is a clear and present danger to America. I'm not joking about this. It is a clear and present danger. And if we don't insulate ourselves by cleaning up our own communities, we will catch every stinking globalist disease that comes along.
Lot of them to catch, too.
There's a lot of them to catch. And, you know, I just have to say to these people like Prague, Kana, and whatever.
Right.
My first thought that comes to my mind, game on, Buster.
Right, right.
Game on. We need to get after this. And now,
yes.
There isn't any.
Well, you've been a big part of this. I want to thank you tonight for coming on the program. And boy, you're so insightful each and every time. And I want to thank you so much for being with us, and we're going to be off the air in just about 10 or 15 seconds.
My pleasure. But
Patrick Wood, thank you again for being with us, and I want to thank you again for all the hard research and all the hard work you've done over the years and trying to bring us out of this this state of scientific dictatorship is what it is.
Yep.
Right?
Thank you, sir.
Right?
Yep.
But anyway, thank you very much for being with us, and we'll have you back again soon. We admire and respect all the work you've done.
Thanks, George.
Okay, thank you. Good night.
Sounds good.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening very much and being with us this evening.